Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with Michael Barrett, Associate for Education at Florida's Conference for Catholic Bishops. Education choice plays a prominent role in Florida's Catholic schools, with nearly 30,000 of the state's 80,000 Catholic school students receiving some form of state scholarship. The two discuss Catholic school history, modern issues such as balancing religious freedom, keeping children safe, and protecting their identities while providing an educational environment based on teaching the fundamental aspects of the Catholic faith, and the opportunities the landmark education choice proposal, Senate Bill 48, will provide for Catholic schools to better serve their communities.
I'm thrilled today to have Michael Barrett with me. Michael is the Associate for Education at the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. So welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Doug. It's great to be here.
So I wanted to start off with a little bit of history. I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with this, but we're going to talk some about Catholic education and the role of Catholic education in Catholic identity. But there's a fascinating history that I think a lot of folks may know, but I just want to put this in context. There was a big influx of Catholics into the United States, driven by the Irish potato famine in the 1840s. And this really caused some alarm from the Protestant community. The Protestants basically control all of government, both at the federal and state level in the United States. And they were concerned that Catholics weren't really that supportive of democracy. And they were concerned that the influx of Irish Catholics would undermine the quality of democracy in the United States. And so they turned to the public schools as a way to try to deal with that issue. The first mandatory school attendance law was in Massachusetts in 1852, and the schools were controlled by Protestants. And the goal was hopefully forcing the Catholic kids to attend the Protestant schools, reading the King James Bible, learning about Protestantism, and hopefully undermining the influence of Catholicism in the United States. That led to the Catholic community responding, creating their own Catholic schools, and there was a lot of back and forth all the way through the 19th century, a lot of conflict around that. We all heard about the Blaine Amendment. The Blaine Amendments happened in the late 1800s, and it was initiated by James Blaine, a congressman from Maine, who initially tried to use the Blaine Amendment at the federal level to make it against the law for any public funds to be used to go to private schools, most notably Catholic schools. He failed at the national level, but managed to get several states to pass Blaine Amendments. There's even one in Florida, as you know. And again, the goal was to try to undermine Catholicism by basically making it unaffordable for kids to attend Catholic schools. That effort actually continued into the 20th century. I think the most famous example being a constitutional amendment in Oregon in 1922, which was led in part by the Ku Klux Klan, who apparently weren't fans of Catholics or Jews, by the way. And they were trying to basically make sure that they destroyed Catholic education in Oregon. And that constitutional amendment made it against the law for kids to attend non-public schools. There was a heroic group of nuns who filed suit and got their case eventually to the U.S. Supreme Court in a decision called Pierce v. Society of Sisters. They were able to prevail, and the U.S. Supreme Court said it was, in fact, constitutional for families to attend a non-public school. So to this day, that sort of was one of the defining decisions that allowed us to protect Catholic education. And of course, into the 20th century, I'm old enough to remember John Kennedy's run for president. He was the first Catholic ever elected, and his Catholicism was a huge issue. You know, he had to get over that hump of being a Catholic in order to get elected. And so I think Joe Biden actually is our second Catholic president, if I'm not mistaken. So again, that's a long and interesting history. Of course, that brings us to today. We have a very vibrant education choice movement in Florida, and it's growing around the country. And it's had a huge impact on Catholicism and Catholic education. So let's start there, Michael. Give me quick an update on what's going on with Catholic education in Florida today.
Sure. And thanks for that. Was a great summation of Catholic school history in the U.S., Doug. That was impressive.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, so there are about 80,000 Catholic school students in Florida. We have about 244 Catholic schools throughout the state. Almost 30,000 of those students are actually on some form of state scholarship. So the school choice programs in Florida have been hugely beneficial to the Catholic school system here in Florida. You know, it's funny. During COVID, most schools across the country have seen a decrease in enrollment, even public schools. And lately, there's been a decrease in Catholic school enrollment as well, even before COVID. A lot of that is actually due to sort of the migration of the U.S. population from the Northeast into the Southeast and Southwest. So it's funny, like, Catholic education in Florida is a little bit different than, like, Catholic education in, say, New York State or Ohio, or because Catholic education, the population in Florida has just boomed over the past 50 years, whereas in those places, Catholic education has been there for, you know, centuries. I remember my dad telling stories about growing up in Cleveland, and he would say, you would identify where you were from in the city by what Catholic parish you were attending and went to school at. So, like, he was from Shaker Heights, but he would say, "I'm from St. Anne's."
Right.
And
right.
People knew what he was talking about. And, like, when I was growing up in Tampa, I didn't say, "I'm from Nativity." I was from Brandon. So it's a little bit different culture down here, I think. And so, but I think that Catholic education is doing really well in Florida. And prior to COVID, we really hadn't seen the same enrollment decreases that you see in other parts of the country. And I think that a huge part of that is that Florida is so forward-thinking on school choice and allows parents of low-income and special needs kids to have the opportunity to choose where they send their students to school.
So why is Catholic education so important today? I mean, we talked about historically the efforts from Protestants to eradicate Catholicism, basically, and using public mm-hmm. schools as a weapon to do that. That's not true today, I don't think. Nobody's out to eradicate Catholicism, but there's challenges, mm-hmm. of course. So talk about how the church sees the role of Catholic education in Catholic schools today.
Well, I think there's two facets to that. I think the first is that the church has Catholic schools in order to educate Catholic, the children of Catholic families, not all Catholic families. I mean, you don't have to send your children to Catholic school if you are Catholic, but it's a way for Catholic communities to engage in educating their children to become faithful disciples of Christ and also receive an excellent education in a Catholic environment. And so I think that the first aspect is that. Catholic education is important because it's Catholic and it's provided for Catholic families to be able to educate their children. But second of all, I think it's also something that's also outward facing. It's welcoming of others, and it's provided as an opportunity for others in the community to be able to come in and to be educated and to experience the community that we have in Catholic schools and the excellent education that we offer. And to be welcomed into that community and become a part of that community. For both of those reasons, Catholic education is extremely important today, because the church as a church, we say this, and this is sort of what the whole point of the school choice movement is, you know, families should be able to choose where they educate their children. Catholic education is a great option amongst all the other options that families have to educate their children.
So you guys do a fantastic job of being very welcoming and opening. I mean, basically, like you said, you don't have to be Catholic to go to Catholic schools. And I know a large percentage, in some of your schools, a large percentage of those kids are not Catholic. How do you deal with all the diversity? Obviously, you want to protect your Catholic identity. When kids come to your school and families come to your school, they know they're going to a Catholic school. They know that you're going to promote Catholic values. You know that their behavior at the school has to align to Catholic values and behavior standards. How do you guys manage that tension between all the diversity that comes into the door and also trying to make sure that the school maintains its Catholic identity? How does that process work?
It's about being welcoming, but also being true to yourself and being true to who we are as Catholics. It depends so much on the particular situation and the particular locality. I mean, so much of these issues depend on, okay, what's happening in this particular school, in this particular locality? What community are we serving? What type of student are we serving? What percentage of our school is actually identifies as Catholic? You know, I mean, if you have a school that's 40 or 50% non-Catholic, you're going to approach how you serve that student body differently than if you have a school where 80 or 95% of the student body is Catholic. I think that our schools do a fantastic job of building a real sense of Christian community that is welcoming and that meets people where they're at and also is relational and helps people to build relationships with one another in a way that's healthy and good and helps students and families both to flourish.
Is it fair to say that however a family identifies themselves, atheist, agnostic, Muslim, whatever, mm-hmm. that's not really relevant to you guys as long as when the child comes to the school that they respect the Catholic identity of the school and their behavior conforms to the Catholic behavior standards that you guys are welcoming to all?
Right. So, yeah, we don't have any admissions policies that say, like, you have to be X in order to come here. Students and parents are going to be, you know, like you said, made aware of, like, we're Catholic. This is here's what's going to be taught. And understand that we're going to teach what the church teaches. We're going to teach the Catholic faith. And that's going to inform that's going to inform the environment and the community of the school. It doesn't mean that you yourself have to be Catholic. It's more of a, this is who we are as a community. And if you're willing to be okay with that and enter into that with an open mind and with an understanding of this is the community that you're stepping into, then yeah, there's no issue with the type of person that's coming into our school.
Some faith-based schools have been concerned that as more and more of their students are part of various education choice programs that are publicly funded, mm-hmm. that there may be an attempt by government to start to undermine their religious liberty by adding more regulations and that sort of thing. How's the Catholic community in Florida feel about that? Do you have concerns? How might those concerns manifest themselves? Obviously, the LGBTQ issue has gotten a lot of publicity. And some schools have been criticized by people saying that, they wouldn't allow LGBTQ kids on campus. Mm-hmm. I haven't found that. I think what I've found is that as long as their behavior conforms to the behavior expectations of the school and everybody agrees to that before they go in, mm-hmm. then identity isn't important as long as that child respects the environment that they're going into and respects the values of the school. So I was just curious if there are concerns that the government might come in and tell you guys that you have to accept certain behaviors, even if it's not compatible with your Catholic teachings. By the way, I'm not suggesting that that's the case with LGBTQ kids. I mean, I have no examples of any kids. We have a lot of those kids in the program and they're very respectful to any environment they go into. So. Mm-hmm. That's just the public debate, the public dialogue. So I was just curious how you guys thought about that. And I'm sure it's been dialogue inside the Catholic education community about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, so, you know, most recently, obviously, some of the fight has been over potential non-discrimination language being placed into the scholarship statutes. And I think that, and our position has been that it's unnecessary because we don't discriminate against anyone in our admissions policies. And so when we look at that issue, the question of if we're going to include that language, what is discrimination, right? Because we look at it and we say, okay, well, look, if an LGBTQ student wants to come into our school, or, and honestly, for us, a lot of the times the issue is not an issue with an LGBTQ student doesn't arise at the admissions side. It's when a student has been in our schools for several years often, and an issue comes up where they're struggling or experiencing gender dysphoria or trying to come to understand their own sexual identity. And, you know, there's a lot of times there's other issues that come along with that they're trying to deal with. And I think the first thing to note when you come across those issues are that oftentimes those people are experiencing real suffering and are really struggling with things, and they deserve compassion and dignity and respect and love. And the best pastoral care, absolutely, 100%. And in all of our schools, there's zero tolerance for bullying. No type of slurs or inappropriate or offensive language from students or teachers are going to be tolerated. At the same time, and I think this is where some of the struggle comes in with these religious freedom issues and arguments over non-discrimination language and things like that are at the end of the day, the Catholic faith is founded on an understanding of Christian anthropology that, you know, God is real. God created people male and female. That matters for a lot of things, including the Catholic understanding of marriage and gender, you know, people are embodied souls. There's a union of body and soul. And for that reason, you can't actually change your gender from male to female, female to male. I think that's where the concern comes in, because, okay, we allow non-discrimination language, but at what point does it become discrimination to stand up in class and in a theology class and teach, okay, this is what the church teaches. And I think that in our schools, anytime an issue arises with a student who's struggling with these issues, we don't have like written policies on all these things. You know, like we don't have a policy about X, Y, Z in terms of how to deal with these issues, because it's a conversation. It's talking to the parent and to the student about, okay, how are we approaching this issue, and ensuring that the student knows that they're loved and that they're cared for. At the same time, for instance, if you have a student who's struggling with gender dysphoria and they want to transition in our schools, there's just a profound, if we were to say, okay, this student who was a female is now a male, and we're all gonna call him by this name, and he's gonna use this bathroom and things like that. In that instance, you are affirming something that is not, it's incompatible with basic Christian anthropology at that point. And so our approach is generally going to be more of a conversation of, okay, what can we do to accommodate this student? There's no formula. Like, right. It's about relationship and it's about communication and it's about love. And if, you know, if someone is in a Catholic school and they want to transition, they want to use a bathroom that's different than their biological gender, if the school says, no, we're not going to do that, because that's, you know, and all of these decisions, you know, most of these decisions are going to be made at the school level of how to deal with these issues. And that decision would be made on part because of that. But at the same time, that's also a discussion that's going to be made with the family and with counselors and with pastors and with, right. with a whole host of people who are there to provide the best care possible for this student. And so I think that, I guess what I'm trying to say when I talk about all these different situations and is that there's a difference between loving and caring for these students and not bullying. But there comes a point where it's, with some of these issues, in order to have the environment and to create the Catholic environment and to provide a Catholic education for the students that we want to provide it for, there has to be an assent to Catholic values and how we approach and how we understand human nature and marriage as Catholics. And that is meant to be done completely with care and with love for the people that we're dealing with. And that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to be expelled, or you know, told that they're bad people or that they're going to go to hell. That's kind of the issue. That's kind of the concern from a religious freedom standpoint, is we're not trying to discriminate against anybody. We're trying to maintain an environment where we can build and teach and provide an environment that is based on the fundamental aspects of the Catholic faith. And there are things about this where sometimes there's a difference between the fundamental understanding of human nature between, you know, maybe a student and parents and the school, or a student, parents and what's the Catholic school that they're attending. And there's just, and in those instances, like it's sort of a question of, okay, if people want to go in a certain direction, maybe this isn't the best environment for you to have your child in. That's more of the discussion that happens. And anyway, so I guess the religious freedom concern there is that those things are fundamentally important to the Catholic faith and educating people in the Catholic faith. Whether or not everybody in the school agrees with it or not, that, you know, it's important to our fundamental view of human nature and of reality and of marriage. And I think the concern is that that language, non-discrimination language, or other potential regulations that could come down the road, are going to require us to do or say things that are contrary to or contradict the Catholic belief.
You know, obviously, in a pluralistic democracy, you're going to have a lot of diversity of identity. And I think the challenge is, how do you build a society where everybody's identity is respected and honored, and nobody's identity causes anybody else to be disadvantaged? And I think you did a really nice job of articulating how you guys try to do that in a very loving way. I have a friend, Nadine Smith, who we work with, who is executive director of Quality Florida, and she tells a beautiful story of her own family, of her dad, who's a very deeply religious man and a leader in his church, and how they had to spend a couple of years working through making sure each one of them felt safe about their identity. And that's a challenge, because sometimes, you know, if my identity is a threat to your identity or vice versa, those mm-hmm. issues have to be worked out. And I hope that we can work those out in the ways that you just articulated, with people in a respectful, loving way in which everybody's honored, everybody is committed to protecting other people's, each other's identity. No one's trying to impose their will on anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think I appreciate the fact that when you try to legislate that, it's hard. You know, I mean, human relationships are complex, and I'm not sure you can micromanage those from Washington or Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. I think basic protections are important. But we can do basic protections in ways that honor everybody's identity. And I think that's what everybody's working toward. Is that fair?
I think so. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is why another reason why school educational choice is so important. It's okay to disagree. you know, it's okay if people think that I'm wrong about my fundamental understanding of human nature. I'm going to disagree with you, but that's okay. We can still be friends. And I have friends that I disagree with about those things, and we're still friends. So it's important to be able to provide, like you said, like respect people's identities, but allow people to flourish and to choose where they go, where they send their, where they educate their children and how they educate their children. And I think it's important to provide different options for them to be able to do that.
So I want to transition in the little time we have left, Michael. By the way, I appreciate how generous you've been with your time and the quality of your thinking. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So there's a big bill, a choice bill in the Florida Senate, sponsored by our friend Senator Manny Diaz Jr. from Miami. Senate Bill 48 has a lot of pieces in it. It combines several of the programs to try to streamline them, make it more user-friendly, provides more flexibility for spending by creating education savings accounts so that kids can spend the money on tuition fees, but also tutoring programs and summer programs, et cetera. Have you guys had a chance to talk about within the Catholic education community how this bill, what kind of opportunities this bill might provide for you guys as Catholic educators in terms of, I mean, you can serve homeschool families now through this bill. But I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about how, what the opportunities might be. Are there other opportunities that might be available to Catholic schools in terms of serving the community?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think SB 48 by Senator Diaz is a great bill, and I think that it provides a lot of opportunities. I think that one of the great things about it is it eliminates the prior public school attendance requirements in the FES and McKay scholarships. I just think it's so great how it streamlines and the consolidates the scholarships into just two scholarships, because that's really one of the things that it seems like you encounter so often is parents are bombarded by all these different options, all these different scholarships with all these different requirements, and all these different eligibility guidelines and things like that. And it's confusing. I mean, when I started and I had to get back into the education policy realm, it took me, it's like, okay, wait, which scholarship is this? Okay. All right. And so I just think that's brilliant and is very needed. And so I think that, it'll be really beneficial to parents, And the prior public school requirement is so important because, you know, we have the Catholic schools in Florida serve almost 4,000 McKay students. And there are a lot of students, probably close to 1,000, that are on some type of like private school service plan that are not on McKay, but that who would probably qualify for McKay if they if the prior public school attendance requirement was removed. And we do a great job of serving these kids also. I mean, our schools are equipped to be able to serve McKay students, and we ensure that we're able to provide the services that those students need when we accept them into our schools. And so there are a lot of students who are either diagnosed with a disability or experience a drop in income after they've been in their private school for several years, oftentimes. I mean, I was doing some research because that eliminating the prior public school attendance requirement is one of our main legislative priorities. I was doing some research on when students receive IEPs. And I think if you look at the numbers from K through eight, it peaks in third or fourth grade. So there's a lot of students out there who are being diagnosed with whatever special need that requires them to get a private school service plan that's, you know, something that's similar to an IEP, and they've already been in their school for several years, and it's just those students should also be able to apply for and obtain these scholarships as well without having to go, you know, if they really want to get the scholarship, go back to public school for a year and then come back to their private school. So we think that's super important. And then also, I mean, just the flexibility of funds. I don't know in terms of there's all this talk about pods and homeschooling and all these different new approaches to education after the pandemic and sort of what this is going to do innovation wise and things like that. And part-time students or all these different things. And I don't know, we don't really have there's no grand plan from the Catholic schools to move forward. We're just like still trying to get through the pandemic. But I think it certainly opens the door to considering, okay, like, what, you know, how can we best serve our students? And really opens the door to, you know, I think it's important to consistently ask the big questions, you know, like, okay, how do we educate well? And, you know, I think that allowing this, what this bill does is it gives parents control over how they educate their students. You know, if you want to homeschool, you can do that. If you want to put your kid on ADON virtual, large diocesan virtual school, and that's the best way for them to learn, great. Or if you have some money left over after paying cost and tuition and you want to do this program or some online class or whatever, I'm just now starting to experience this. My son is about to turn a year old in about a month. And so, you know, you're already starting to think, okay, what are we going to do for this kid for school? Like, and it just is like, it's really important. And like every parent, I think every parent cares deeply about how their child is educated in a way that no one else can. And so I think it's really important for them to be able to decide how they're going to provide an education for their child. So,
you know, I appreciate you talking about during the pandemic, a lot of people have lost jobs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How traumatic it is for a family to go through that. And at the same time, then having to move their kid out of the school because they no longer can afford tuition. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that the ability to protect those families and say, you know, even though you've lost your job, you know, we can give you a scholarship. You don't have to leave the school for a year to come and come back again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like unusual punishment. So I'm pleased that that people appreciate that during the pandemic, we've got to be really thoughtful about the realities that people are experiencing. So uh-huh. I agree with you. I think that's going to be a critical part of this. Well, Michael, you've been very generous with your time. Are there any other things that you'd like to share on behalf of Catholic education in Florida?
Well, I think Catholic schools are a great educational option. I think they do a fantastic job of educating students and of forming students into solid young men and women. But I think also here at the FCCB, I think that, you know, we represent the bishops of Florida, who are the pastors of all of the Catholics of Florida. And so, you know, I think also just to say, you know, we're in terms of education policy, you know, we're concerned with, we really do believe in this educational pluralism idea. That they're you know, not all Catholics send their students to Catholic schools. You know, some people homeschool, some people go to public school or virtual school or some other private school. And we need a robust system of all of those types of schools. And every family should have a real option to be able to send their child to wherever they're going to flourish.